from the Belgian Grand Prix. Welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, the speeds at the Tour de France are higher than ever. How are they doing it? We will be looking at the science, the tech, plus the change in race dynamics and strategy that is allowing them to break all records.
Plus, the new bikes from Volkswagen and Tesla, Jonas Vingegaard's shock exit from the Tour de France, why anti-doping authorities are testing big-name riders in the middle of the night, the US city that hasn't had a single traffic-related death in 3 years, and cycling-specific coat hangers.
But you didn't know you needed them, did you?
This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that Jonas Vingegaard is out of the Tour de France.
It was a huge blow for him, his team, and the race in general, to be fair, and the first time he has ever withdrawn from a Grand Tour.
We wish him a speedy recovery, of course. The race would definitely not be the same without him, even if he was quite unlikely to trouble Pogacar.
Yeah. And now we also learnt this week that our French colleague and ultra-endurance nutcase, Max, has started the transcontinental race. So
as we record this, he's less than 24 hours in, but still, he's covered almost 400 kilometres. Despite that, he appears to be mid-pack, according to the online tracker.
He would not be a GCN presenter if he was anything other than mid-pack. Except, actually, nearly last, but you know what we mean. But the thing with the transcontinental, though, is that each competitor picks their own route. So just because you've covered the most distance doesn't actually mean you're leading the race. So at the start, it's quite confusing, isn't it?
I'm glad you said that, because I've definitely found it confusing so far. We also learned that Pinarello Q36.5's Chris Harper was forced to pull out of the Tour de France last week after a crash. He got to the end of the stage, but he had to go to hospital, where he had part of his thumb amputated.
Oh, this is absolutely brutal, isn't it? Absolutely brutal. Although he has already joked on Instagram that he is now 10 grams lighter. So hopefully he's okay with things.
Right, finally this week, we learned that the riders at the Tour de France are once again breaking records this year.
Yeah, so Tadej Pogacar became the youngest ever rider to notch up 25 Tour de France stage wins. He's done so 117 days younger than Mark Cavendish was, and actually a year and 65 days younger than Eddy Merckx was.
Meanwhile, Paul Seixas became the youngest ever wearer of the white jersey as best young rider, a competition for which he'll actually be eligible up to and including the 2031 edition of the race, assuming the rules don't change between now and then.
I mean, it feels like they should, to be honest.
It does really, doesn't it? Yeah.
Now, the record we're focusing on today, though, is that of the fastest ever Tour de France stage. Last week, Soren Varenschold won stage 11 into Nevers, covering the 161 kilometres in 3 hours and 10 minutes.
Which is an average speed of 50.9 kilometres per hour, which is 31.6 miles per hour. Now, the previous record was held by Mario Cipollini, who all the way back in 1999 won a 195-kilometre stage in 3 hours 50. That was an average of 50.3 kilometres per hour.
That's quite bonkers as well, isn't it?
It is, really.
In 1999. Yeah, OK. Remarkably, though, we also had the fourth fastest stage ever last week. And it was remarkable because it was on a day that the race organisers classified as hilly. Plus, it was the longest stage of this year's race at 206 kilometres. But despite that, and over 2,000 metres of climbing, Mauro Schmidt averaged 49.9 kilometres per hour en route to victory.
I mean, on that terrain, that is absolutely bonkers, isn't it? Now, most of the elevation gain that day did come on a single climb towards the end of the stage, but it was a Category 1 climb that averaged 7% gradient for 9 kilometres.
Yeah, I cannot get my head around this. We've all been there, right? On a ride, you've got a good average speed, and then you go up a hill, and no matter what you do, it just absolutely plummets. There's nothing you can do about it. So the question is, how on earth are they going so fast? I mean, it can't be put down to one single factor, can it? But rather several that are adding up to make a big difference.
And we're actually going to start with one that hasn't been spoken about that much, and it's the fact that, more than ever, the biggest budget teams, and therefore the best riders, are dominating the race. There seem to be fewer and fewer chances for breakaway wins, and as such, there are far more riders and teams who want to get up the road in the first place each day.
Yeah, in turn, though, that means that more teams are willing to chase if they miss the move. Now, it's happened a good few times at this year's Tour de France, where the break has taken an inordinate amount of time to establish itself, and that's then often seen an average of well over 50 k's an hour even on rolling terrain.
Exactly. And on a similar note, actually, UAE and Pogacar are quite happy to let the race sort of unfold in the early part of each stage rather than taking complete control. Whereas in previous eras, the GC leaders team has normally been determined to shut things down at the first opportunity by kind of blocking the road or stopping for a nature break as soon as any brakes established itself.
Again, that means that the early attacks last longer and so the speed stays higher. There's also the fact that they are actually racing from kilometre zero. So we are going back a little bit here, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
But there was a time in the 80s and the 90s where riders would cruise along for the first hour or two from each stage before they actually started racing.
Hard to believe now, isn't it? But yeah, back in those days, where there was no live coverage from the start, they'd often wait for the helicopters to fly overhead and then start racing once they knew the TV coverage had started.
Yeah. It seems bizarre now, doesn't
it? It does, yeah.
What was it like in your day?
I had one race where it was like that.
Really?
And that was because it was Nico Matta, my teammate's final race as a pro rider. He tried to stop everyone from racing. So I could have one day in my last of my career where we go back to the good old days of not racing for the first hour. It lasted 3 kilometres, I think. Maybe four.
Really?
And then people just started racing.
I remember one race with your former teammate, Jeremy Hunt. It was the Nationals and we were in the break and he didn't do a turn until he heard the helicopter and then started rolling through. I mean, fair play to him. Mm-hmm. Good move, that. Now, we should, going back to the point, we should remember that the stages were longer
back
in the day, weren't they? But the next thing that has changed is equipment. There is still a degree of scepticism as how much difference this is really making. But as two people who have ridden the best road bikes available for 25 years, we can tell you they make a huge difference.
Huge, yeah. So almost every rider is obviously using an aero bike and aero wheels for all road stages now, not just the flat ones. They've got aero skin suits instead of the old jerseys and shorts, aero helmets instead of the old ventilated ones, aero socks, dialed in positions, and pretty much everything else you can think of as well.
Narrow handlebars.
As narrow as they'll go anyway.
Yeah, Alex Payton has been moaning at me today about the width of his handlebars and saying
again
that he can't possibly cope with this challenge we've got to do on Thursday because his bars are too wide. Tyres, that's the other one, isn't it? They have made an enormous difference to speed. Most pro riders think, in fact, that it is the biggest difference in the last decade. And the science, to be fair, backs them up. You go from tubular tyres, which were glued onto rims, and they're now on tubeless tyres that are bigger with completely different construction almost, and with faster rubber compounds to boot.
Over the course of 3,300 kilometres, basically the distance of the Tour de France this year, the tyres on their own will make the overall race about a kilometre per hour faster, which sounds difficult to believe, but independent testing from people like bicyclerollingresistance.com show how big that difference is, even between the best and the worst current tyres, let alone those from a bygone era.
Once you've clicked on bicyclerollingresistance.com, by the way, I warn you, you will lose hours of your life on there and probably a lot of money too, because once you've seen the data, you can't unsee it. Modern tyres, we say, are also grippier, aren't they? In part due to the better rubber compounds, but also because they're running wider tyres, you have a different, larger contact patch with the road, which then allows riders to corner faster, thus carry more momentum. Then we're moving on now. Nutrition.
Yep.
Big change there. Again, a lot of people that are bored of hearing about carbohydrates, but that has made a huge difference.
Yeah, so back in the day, before science evolved, riders were ingesting a maximum of 50 grams per hour, but often a lot less than that. There were, however, nutritionists, such as Dr. Asger Jorkendrup, who had done research with positive results on higher carb intake all the way back in the mid-2000s, but it didn't really become mainstream until a lot later than that.
Much later. Late 2010s, probably even the early 2020s, I guess. And that is allowing riders to simply ride harder for much longer rather than being conservative with their energy expenditure. It means that races are opening up much earlier rather than people waiting for the final part of the final climb to make their attack. Yeah. So that's I mean, that is massive, isn't it? If you've got the break that's not going until later, and then you've got the big hitters that are willing to race from earlier.
Yeah, the finale does start a lot earlier.
Does it ever stop in the middle? Not really, does it?
Not much these days, does it? Not much. And further to all of that, we recently heard that a few select teams have been using lactate as an exogenous energy source, UAE Team Emirates amongst them. There's not that much science out there on this just yet, but we do have a full video coming on this very subject very soon, featuring an interview with one of the scientists behind one of the gels that is currently apparently being used at the Tour de France.
Is lactate the new ketone, Dan?
In some respects, yes. You have to watch the video on later on this week.
All right.
Speak to an independent party as well.
Okay. You tell me later as well.
Okay.
Now, beyond all of what we've spoken about, the biggest difference is frankly quite simple, isn't it? Today's riders are pushing out enormous power numbers.
Exactly, yeah. So training has indeed come on leaps and bounds, as has recovery and every other aspect of performance. In fact, performance teams in World Tour squads now are huge when you see them at the Tour de France. Those teams are investing millions each year just into the salaries of those performance teams because they know that they need to.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, as well as the above reasons, there are others that allow Tour de France riders to go fast in a way, well, that the general public couldn't, but that hasn't actually changed, has it, since, well, forever?
There's a few things that have remained constant. The main one being they're racing on closed roads. There's no need to slow down for traffic lights, for traffic in general, for junctions or anything else.
And that Jonas Vingegaard probably should have slowed down before that junction.
Oh, a bit early, mate.
Okay.
Yeah, take your point, though. But the difference that makes to momentum makes a huge difference to the speed.
Plus, at the Tour de France, they're racing a lot on newly resurfaced roads.
Yep.
And any of you who've ridden on silky, smooth, brand new tarmac versus something like chip seal will know just how much faster you roll along it.
Yeah. It's always a real pleasure to ride on brand new tarmac, isn't it?
It is indeed.
There's also bike handling. So Tour de France riders aren't just the most powerful in the world, but they're also the most skillful. You simply don't get to that level of rider if you are not a confident bike handler because you wouldn't survive in the pro peloton.
Yeah, as such, they are able to comfortably ride just millimetres away from each other, which again makes a difference to how fast a group or a peloton is able to roll along.
It is always surprising when you ride in a group of that level how fast you can go for the same effort as with a group at a much lower level.
Yeah.
Just finally then, they have an inordinate number of vehicles in front of them a lot of the time at the Tour de France. We actually recently did a video highlighting just how much difference just a single motorbike makes, even at distances where you'd think slipstreaming is completely null and void. The sheer volume of traffic in front of the race will make a significant difference to the speed at which they're travelling.
I wonder how much difference it would make.
It's very
hard to
quantify,
the convoy,
I imagine.
Yeah.
But effectively, you've got a whole convoy in front, in the peloton and behind, presumably just pushing the air in that direction the whole day.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
Mm.
I mean, so really, they're not as good as we think they are.
No, we could all do the Tour de France.
Probably. Let us know your thoughts, though. Do you agree with the science, or do you think there's something more sinister going on? We were genuinely interested to get your opinion, which you can leave in the comment section down below.
Right, moving on, another reminder that we've got loads of special edition merchandise for sale over in the GCN shop right now.
Yeah, we have got prints, we've got t-shirts, we've got limited edition Camelback water bottles, and more, in fact, to celebrate each and every one of the Grand Tours.
You sound like a proper market seller there, mate. Roll up, £3 for a pound, get your Grand Tour prints here.
I tell you what, £3 for a pound would be a bargain.
Yeah, it would. Yeah.
They're not, unfortunately. I don't think I did sound like that, Dan. Anyway, head to shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com if you would like to make a purchase or scan the QR code that's on screen now.
Yeah, and they're not £3 for a pound, unfortunately.
No.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Cycling shorts now, and we'll start with some more racing news. Former world cross-country mountain bike champion, current world mountain bike marathon champ, and Leadville 100 record holder, Kate Courtney, announced, surprisingly last week, that with immediate effect, she'd signed for the FDJ Suez road team of Demi Vollering.
And she's already been racing,
she
actually,
has, yeah.
Hasn't she? The team won thanks to Carlene Swinkels, and Courtney finished 15th in her first pro road race with that team, should I say. And then she was the best placed rider in that team in 13th the following day.
Yeah, I'd be so interested to know how she gets on, how she's capable of.
I think she might go quite well.
Well, yeah, particularly because she kind of went off the boil a little bit in mountain biking. She won the world's her first outing as a senior and then struggled to hit those heights again. But she's obviously got the talent. So, yeah, change of scene, renewed inspiration. Yeah. Might explain why Wout van Aert was last seen riding a gravel bike up Ollie Bridgewood's Dirty Stelvio.
Is that some kind of euphemism?
No, it really wasn't a euphemism. No, look, that's the route up the Italian climb, the Stelvio, that Ollie made a video about last year. He is claiming to have inspired Wout van Aert to have ridden up there as well.
Right, one last bit of racing news. So both Tadej Pogacar and Jonas Vingegaard were woken up in the middle of the night on Saturday night by the drug testers, the latter at 2 a.m. And Pogacar escaping slightly later with a 5 a.m. wake-up call.
Do we actually know why they got such a early, late?
Yes,
protest?
We do to a degree. So the tests were carried out by the ITA, which is the International Testing Agency, but it has to be in line with AFLD rules, that's the French authority, who state that no test can be carried out between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. without a serious or specific suspicion of doping.
Hmm. I mean, I guess it's their job to be suspicious, right?
I guess you could paint it that way, yeah.
Well, it feels like that would be a healthy attitude for a dope tester to have.
Definitely need that, yeah.
We do. Are you thinking, therefore, they've got some kind of evidence?
I have no idea, but I mean, this rule has been in place since 2016, so for 10 years, and over that 10-year period, this is the first time we understand that it's ever happened.
I mean, to be fair, Pogacar was pretty cool about it, wasn't he? Yeah. He said he's happy to be tested at that time of night, if that's what it takes.
Yeah, which, I mean, if you want more on this, I spoke quite a lot about it on yesterday's GCN Racing News show, about the rules, why it might be happening, and why I think it probably should be happening, given cycling's past.
God, that is brutal, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, as in, yeah, I get it, and it's good if that's what it takes, but equally, like, getting woken up at 2 a.m.
Yeah, 2 weeks into the Tour de France, between two mountain stages.
Oh. Anyway, there we go. Right, this next story isn't strictly cycling, but it is definitely relevant, we think.
Yeah, Cycling Industry News reported that the European Commission is fining AliExpress €500 million for failing to properly address the issue of people using the platform to sell counterfeit, illegal or unsafe products.
Yeah, so in cycling, there are plenty of products out there that are either one, two or all three of the above. Everything from fake frames to illegal and mega dodgy e-bikes.
It's got to be a good thing as well, right?
Yeah, you'd think so.
Mm. Right, veering into politics slightly now, but it's worth flagging. So $2 billion that had been earmarked for bike lanes has been redirected into roads, and mentions of bike lanes and speed cameras have disappeared from the US Department of Transport website.
Yes, apparently because they're no longer relevant to making roads safer. Yes. It feels like a little bit of a step back, well, for safety in general, but certainly for cycling safety, doesn't it? And I do get the logic that more people drive, therefore invest the money where it will benefit the majority, except, well, I don't know, from my perspective, like, you're not counting the costs of driving, i.e. the costs on public health, on environmental health, and just generally kind of future-proofing things, maybe?
I get what you're saying.
I don't know. I mean, I know we don't really do politics, but there we go. Yeah.
Thankfully, we've got a flip side to this. So.
Well, we do have a flip side,
and that is that the city in Massachusetts called Somerville was in the news last week for having not had a single traffic-related death in 3 years, something they attributed to lowered speed limits all over the city, repainted and shortened crosswalks to reduce the amount of time pedestrians are in the roadway, adding new speed humps, fixed sidewalks, expanding its bike lane network, installing new bus stops and bus lanes, and stepping up ticketing for distracted driving.
They've done all the things, haven't they, to make it safer?
Admittedly, a
city of 85,000 people is a little bit different to a city of 10 million or so, but still shows that where there's a will, there is a way. Right, sticking kind of to cycling safety, we'll move on now to some hot tech. Two car brands launching bikes.
Firstly then, the new Volkswagen by N Plus e-bike range, which they say bridges the gap between automotive safety and urban micromobility.
So what's that? Like, it's got its own built-in bike path or something?
No, I shall continue reading the press release, sir.
Okay.
Prioritising rider awareness over raw speed or motor power, the new sport and crossover models utilise a sophisticated network of sensors and cameras. The initiative aims to help cyclists navigate congested city streets safely while giving motorists clearer visual cues of the rider's intentions.
Which is what, exactly?
I don't understand it from that.
I really don't
explain
further.
Well, at first pass, it seems like they've tried to build in car safety tech, like sensors and cameras, to give the rider greater awareness of what's going on around them without needing to do things like turn your head to look.
All right, okay.
However, unlike Canyon's new V2X-equipped bike, which communicates with cars, this very much places the emphasis of safety on the cyclist and could definitely be construed as victim blaming.
Yeah. Yeah, I sort of kind of got that. And the smart helmet that goes with it, that automatically calls the emergency services if you get knocked off your bike by a car. Again, fairly sensible idea, but there's something that doesn't sit quite right given that this is coming from a car manufacturer.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? It's the fact that this isn't a bike brand, it's a car brand. Even if the sentiment behind it is good, it still feels a little bit uncomfortable.
It does. It does. And maybe we're being oversensitive here, but it does feel a little bit like, hey, cyclists, protect yourselves from our cars. Anyway, the new Tesla bike, however, might be up your street because it's priced at just $225. Mm.
Don't get too excited, though. It's not electric and it's designed only for small riders.
Yeah, really small, aren't they? Tesla have released a balance bike. And to state the obvious, it's for kids. It's not carbon, despite the looks. It's magnesium. And that $225 price tag is suddenly looking quite steep, isn't it?
I wouldn't say steep.
For a balance bike, $225. It's got no pedals. It's got no brakes.
All right, yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know.
I can't remember. I mean, when Jude had a balance bike, it was 14 years ago. And actually, I got it free.
There you go.
I think I've got trade price tag. I don't think I got it free. Anyway, for once, though, it is a stupid price tag that's not aimed at real cyclists.
No, I don't think it is, no.
For the bike rider who has everything, though, and is looking to offload a little spare cash, have you ever thought about purchasing some cycling-specific coat hangers?
Yes, cycling-specific coat hangers. Only $10 each, Dan. So, but I think you can only buy them in a pack of four for $40. But still, what a bargain.
Yeah, what a bargain. We spotted these on Velo News. They're made by Foothill Products, who do some funky things with storage and indoor training. Not quite sure what the idea behind these are, though.
Right. Hanging up your clothes?
But beyond the normal coat hanger.
I have
got a cycling-specific coat hanger from Reynolds.
Have you?
Yeah. Remember when we used to use those
wheels?
Oh,
yeah, it was a chopped-up wheel.
It was,
yeah. Yeah, that's quite cool, actually.
I only got one, but it's still going strong.
Now, this might not surprise any of you, given my slightly crumpled demeanour most of the time, but...
You haven't got any coat hangers?
I've got some coat hangers, but why on earth would you hang cycling kit up? I mean, like, one of the reasons I love cycling kit is you can't crease it.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
You just squish it up in the tightest ball.
Imagine if it was creasable, how you'd look on the bike as well. I mean, it wouldn't be very aero. Or maybe it would. It would trip the air.
Aero creases, yeah. Right, we have had two Hollywood Does Cycling movie mentions in recent months. I found another one this week, Dan. Mm.
Now, we don't actually know anything about the plot of this one.
No, we don't.
Only that this action comedy is going to star Jason Statham and Hannah Waddingham, and it's called... Jason Statham Stole My Bike.
Hence why we thought it was about bikes.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know whether it is or not.
No, I'm intrigued about it either way. Right then, here's a news story that will massively creep you all out. So ABC News in Australia reported that a woman in her 60s was out for a very nice ride on a bike path when she ran over an eastern brown snake. If you don't know, they are one of the world's most deadly snakes.
Yeah, so it can take between 15 to 30 minutes to die from a snake bite from an eastern brown. One drop of poison is enough to kill 90 people.
Oh my word.
I know. And death will come to you by internal hemorrhaging, progressive paralysis, and finally, cardiac arrest. Mm.
Lovely. Anyway, this is what happened.
Oh!
Yes, the snake got wrapped around her drivetrain, but with the head free to move around, unfortunately. And incredibly, while she did get bitten, it was a dry bite, so there was no venom, and thankfully she was okay.
Yeah, the same cannot be said, unfortunately, for the snake. Apparently it was quite hard to deal with the snake because the ends of the snake were free to move around.
Yeah.
But eventually they were able to euthanize said snake. So a sad story all round, really, but I mean...
Round, I mean she could have died.
Well, yeah, but It would have been better if she'd not, unfortunately, ridden over it in the first
obviously,
place. That's the sad bit, right?
Obviously, yeah. I mean, we say that for every story, there's no stories. Anyway, last week, moving on, we showed you our brand new custom painted GSN HJC road helmet.
Just looking for one. There's one up there.
Hello, so I'm going to grab it now.
Yes, if you would, yeah.
Oh, Sid's going to grab it for us. Anyway. It turns out that their custom painter has been rather busy. The whole Total Energy team have got their new time trial helmets custom painted to look like the Marvel hero Iron Man.
Pretty cool that, isn't it? I mean, I'm not much of a Marvel aficionado, but out of all of the Marvels, Iron Man's probably my fave.
Yeah.
He's quite funny. Anyway, let us know if you agree with that, by the way. Do you think HSC should in fact sell this to the general public? If enough of you say yes, then they potentially could do.
Yeah.
So let us know in the comments section.
I bet there'll be a lot of fans of that combination. I actually hope that HJC sponsor an actual Ironman as well. That'd be cool, wouldn't it, with that helmet?
Yeah, that would be cool.
In fact, maybe the new men's record holder, Sam Laidlow, would be a good start. We spoke about him
well,
before.
Well, technically, Dan, he actually won a challenge event and not an Ironman.
Ah, that is a good point.
So he's not an Ironman. Well, I mean, he is an Ironman, but he's, you know, he's not the Ironman world record holder.
No, okay. All right, in that case, maybe whoever wins in Kona this year.
That seems fair. Right, next up, some more product news. An off-road specific Camelback hydration pack that could be perfect for some epic gravel racing. They say that they've used body mapping technology to manage heat with their new Chase Race 4 and Adventure 8 vests.
Yep. Also with these, they've distributed the weight of the hydration packs sort of across the upper body to stop it from bouncing around on the rough technical fire roads and pea gravel.
So,
and it's also positioned quite well up your back, which means that you've got easy access to your jersey pockets.
Have you signed up for one of those?
I haven't yet. No, I quite like one though.
No,
because I think I might need to put my gel in that rather than the bottle next to a gravel event.
Right, some Zwift news now. They recently announced an expansion to their virtual Paris map, which you might remember they created initially for their virtual Tour de France in the COVID hit 2020.
I do remember.
When there wasn't a Tour de France in July.
No, 6 years ago, crikey.
Anyway, we have that on GCN? Was it GCN Plus?
I think it was GCN Plus. We certainly had it on GCN. I don't know if it was on
Plus
or the YouTube channel. Anyway, that Paris map is now expanded to reflect the recent changes in the real-life Tour de France. That final stage now, of course, includes the very cool cobble climb of Montmartre to the Sacré-Cœur on the summit there. Roughly doubles the size of the Zwift Paris map and can be made into quite a nice 16-kilometre circuit.
I like that. And else, whilst we're talking Zwift, I remember that the Tour de France fan of Zwift is starting less than 2 weeks from now. We will have a preview of the race out for you early next week.
Incidentally as well, Lorraine and I are still doing our weekly banded training ride on Zwift at 12 p.m. BST on Tuesdays and Thursdays, if you fancy joining. All you need to do is search for the GCN Club on your Zwift Companion app if you're interested.
There's also the regular Wednesday rides too, isn't there?
There are. What are they, 6:30 GMT?
I think they are. Yep, and they're banded, of course, remember, which means that it doesn't matter how hard you pedal, you will automatically stick with the group.
Yeah, or how little you pedal as well.
Yes.
It's a good thing for me. Right, before we finish with cycling shorts this week, we've drawn our competition winners out of a virtual hat.
Yeah, this was to win one of 5 £100 vouchers for Precision Fuel and Hydration. And your lucky winners are...
Tilman Schwartz.
Jonathan Anderson.
Hannah Meyer-Latinen.
Scott Mahupuku.
And Lucas Resch.
Congratulations to you lot.
Yeah, well done to all of you. If we haven't already been in touch, we will be soon and we'll get those prizes out to you. Next up, it is time for hack/bodge of the week. If you'd like to get involved in this part of the show, just go to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader. Our first one this week comes in from, it's a great username this site, Bodger Gubbins.
Is it Connor?
Might well be. The picture tells us it is, but it might not be. Just unloading from Bike Packing Adventure. As you can see, the bike is dated, but has evolved to carry camping gear for several nights away. No 3D printing here. Tri-bars to strap bedding roll to. Multiple extra bottle cage mounts, alloy sheet, inner tube cut-off cable tie. The stove fuel bottle and extra water capacity. Underslung stove slash pan set. Topeak rack pack reinforced with 4 heavy-duty reusable cable ties. A lot of zip ties going on here.
Yeah.
So, with 4 to retain over bumpy ground. Large clearance rear mud guard fashioned from corrugated plastic board and more cable ties. Chain guard to keep crud from the rear tyre dumping straight onto the chain. Repurposed old tent poles to stabilise beam rack, pannier and mud guard. Inner tube shock boots. Probably several others that I've forgotten.
Wow. That's like an apocalypse bike, isn't it?
I mean, how you think we're going to say hack or bodge to that? I mean, I don't know. There's a lot going on. It's too much to judge.
I mean, the one thing that's going through my head, Dan, is does it rattle? If that bike rattles half as badly as it looks like it might, particularly the stove pan situation on the down tube, then I'm going to have to say bodge, okay? But if that bike is a quiet bike...
Going hack.
Then it's a hack, isn't it? Well, yeah. I mean, if it works, right? Like, it's quite. There's some quite ingenious storage solutions on there. I'm not sure about that that chain guardy bit by the bottom bracket. That does feel like a step too far. But right. The rest of it, particularly the rear mat, the rear rack, whatever that was.
Yeah.
Topeak something or other. Topeak rack pack.
Bit bodgy, bit hacky. Then is what you're saying.
Well, it just depends. I've got to know about the noise.
Lovely bike, though. We were discussing this before we started the show, weren't we? I mistook this bike for what I've since realised was a Muddy Fox Interactive, which is a bike that blew my mind in about 93 or 94.
But
this
was
came
a
little bit later. Probably didn't.
I mean, a massive bodge, yeah. Whereas, yeah, the white PRST1, I believe this is, was critically acclaimed, but not a wide commercial success. Yeah. Perhaps owing due to the slightly unconventional looks.
Yeah, I'm going hack purely for that bike still going to this day on long adventure trips and bike packing. But size, withholding judgment until he finds out whether or not it rattles.
Basically, yeah. If you want one of those bikes, well, there is literally one downstairs in the bike rack.
Oh, is there?
GMBN bought one for some reason, and it's sat there looking...
Getting rusty.
Pretty swish. Well, maybe. Right, next up, Mark Watson has sent this one in. Fork support for the turbo. I needed to be able to get to a cupboard that the front wheel of my turbo mule was blocking. The solution was to get a fork support. These turned out to be more costly than I thought, so I made one. The wood, screws and bolts were all bits I had laying around. The only parts I needed to buy was the QR mount and rubber feet. It's very stable, even with my modest wattage bazookas. importantly, I can now open the wine cupboard.
Oh, is that what? Yeah, that is important.
So it'll cost £7.50.
Lovely.
That's a neat job, that, to be fair.
It is a neat job. Do you think it's bolted to the floor? It doesn't look particularly
wide.
No,
he said he's got rubber feet.
Oh, doesn't look that wide for stability to me. I think the base platform could have been wider for my
Hold up. Normally, you'd be resting on a front wheel. Which is significantly narrower.
This is quite a good point, Si. let's get the editor to edit out that part of what I said.
Yep.
Yeah, that'll happen.
You know what to do, Sid.
All right, in that case, then I'll go with hack.
Hack, yeah, definite hack, that one, yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Okay. Next username, not quite so good. Just written down, yes, I've got a username. Presumably the question is, have you got a username? I don't know. Or what's your name? Right, front mic. Out this morning with Dan and Ian when Dan's drivetrain started locking up. Not me, obviously. At the bottom, we found the culprit, a missing pivot bolt on his front mic, leaving him stuck in the small ring. Scratching our heads for a few minutes, we found a roadside fix, one perfectly sized twig, which we found on the floor. This fix got us through another 45 kilometres. Who needs spare parts when you've got nature?
This is incredible, Dan. Like, I've zoomed in on said twig. Yeah, how on earth is that keeping it in place?
Well, it looks like it goes... It's not just wedging it up onto the big ring, is it? It's actually going through something.
Yeah, it's literally like replacing the pivot, but I wouldn't have thought it would be strong enough.
No.
Anyway, this is amazing. That's a hack.
With electronic gears, it's not like cable where there's always tension waiting for the cable to slacken off.
No, I suppose not.
That might be one of the most intelligent things I've ever said.
Yeah, well, you've almost redeemed yourself.
Well, they don't know what I've redeemed myself from. That's been cut out.
Oh, yeah, good point. Okay. No, I like that. That's a hack. 100% that's a hack.
Hack from me as well.
It's almost the definition of a hack. Mia sent in this one. I was out on a ride with my friend when suddenly my out front bike computer fell off my mount. Luckily, I had the strap around the handlebars. Crikey, have you ever used one of those?
I haven't, no.
No, I haven't either. So it was saved, but then I couldn't clip the bike computer back into the mount as it had broken. Luckily, I still had my light mount on the bottom, so I flipped it upside down mid-ride and managed to finish the ride like that.
Do many lights have the same mount as a head unit?
I don't know about that many.
Some,
I think, have quarter turn mounts, don't they? But that's quite a cool little fix, that.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of luck as much as a hack, really, isn't it? That you've got the same mount, you can just flip it upside down. But it worked, and you didn't need a light. So hack.
And you thought about it, Mia, so yeah, fair play to that one.
Do you know what I would have done? I would like, I've got a mount underneath it. I could just put my head unit on underneath. I wouldn't even think about turning it back round.
Well, I mean, depending on what you're riding, yeah, I mean, I feel like a head unit in the pocket might be all right.
Mm.
But I guess if you need it for mapping.
Yeah, true.
But there you go.
Power data.
But yeah, big power data. Cool, there were some good ones there, mate, weren't there?
Enjoyed that. Hack for the last one. Thanks for sending them all in.
It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below. We'll pick a winner next week after, of course, the results from last week.
Last week's photo was this one of Tadej Pogacar and Jonas Vingegaard on the start line of one of the Tour de France stages. Now, winner this week is Rich M3477, who put caption competition. Hey, Tadej, Victor wanted me to give this to you.
Ew.
May need some explanation. Not all of you will be aware of this, but during the Giro d'Italia, Victor Campenaerts came under fire because apparently he was weeing into Bidon rather than stopping at the side of the road for a wee, apparently because the side of the road was always too busy, and then discarding the Bidon at the side of the road. And because the roadside was quite busy, you can only presume roadside fans were picking it up as a memento.
I mean, I feel sorry for Victor because he was obviously trying his best to, you know, like, but also that's a bit gross, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm quite impressed that he managed it as well, to be fair.
Yeah, no.
Have you thought about the actual...
No, I think I'm going to try it on Zwift before I take that out to the open road.
Next time you join Dan and Lorraine on Zwift on Tuesday and Thursday, just remember what he's up to.
Yeah, at least you'll be there to help me if anything goes wrong. Anyway, well done to Rich. Get in contact with us on Facebook with your address and we'll get that bottle sent out to you. This week's photo, not dissimilar. This is Pogacar and his teammate Del Toro on the sign-on podium at the Tour de France. I'll get you started. Did you hear that somebody stole the toilet seat from the police station? They got nothing to go on.
That is good, mate. I like that. Well, and also, that opens the floodgates for your best gags.
Yeah, your best did-you-know gags. They are having a right laugh about something, though.
They are indeed.
Anyway, leave your captions in the comments section down below. We'll pick a winner this time next week. We will shortly let you know what's coming up on the channel this week. But first up, we have obviously picked out our favourite comments from last week's videos. We'll start underneath last week's show, where MSeri3294 put, "I'm getting secondhand bonk just listening to those power numbers."
That's a fairly gross phrase, secondhand bonk, isn't it, when you think about it? But I kind of know what you mean. Casp664, crazy numbers and speed from this Tour de France. Mads Pedersen also showed on his Danish Lang Distance podcast that he hit 1,616 watts on his five-second power record on Strava from the stage that he won. Just bonkers that the pros are getting that good.
That was at the end of a very hard stage, wasn't it? It wasn't a bunch sprint. He'd been away all day. Team Attack, looks like Dan hasn't been getting out on his bike as much lately. His bike tan is fading on his gym bro biceps. it has faded, actually. I actually just got burnt. It looked like I had been training really hard, but we were out filming one afternoon.
It was just one day.
It had gone from quite cloudy and overcast to bright sunshine. I hadn't put sun cream on. Yeah, so I got burnt.
You did indeed. Astro Turd sent this next one in. For Si to get rid of wrinkles in his shirts and be more comfortable with triathlon, all he would need to do is to iron, man.
Very good.
I like that one.
Well delivered again.
Thanks, mate. Cheers, yeah.
Hugh Granger. Mark Kowalski is a lovely guy. He organises the annual London...
He was the chap that was doing what last week? Was it a record? The most countries ridden through
in 7 days, wasn't it?
That's right.
He organises the annual London Lockdown Ride, a 100-mile night ride around London. Takes in all sorts of well-known landmarks, but not as you would normally experience them. And at the end of it, you have a fantastic bit of Strava art, a COVID molecule with a syringe going into the middle of it. Highly recommended. Once again, all proceeds go to a Lewisham charity.
That's pretty cool, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, yeah, fair play, Mark. Seems like a pretty good guy. Stephen Robinson, this was about last week's Cycling Hollywood thing. I'm so old, I saw Breaking Away in the theatre. My mum is a huge cycling fan and dragged the whole family to see it. How cool is that?
Really cool, yeah. And just finally from the show, Dan Hoagland put, "Damn, I slept through the nugget." Very proud to scroll back through.
Too proud to scroll back through.
Oh, too proud to scroll back through. Dan's, "Hope you enjoyed the nugget," woke me up.
Okay, should we... I hope you enjoyed the nugget.
That's working quite a few people.
There you go, yeah. We haven't finished yet. Oh, no. Right, loads of amazing comments under our cheap bike challenge as well. Tanfo77, thank you for trying to represent my 12-year-old Cannondale side. I couldn't work out whether that was like, thanks for trying, but you failed miserably, or like, thanks for trying to represent it, because it was cool that I'd chosen it. So anyway, I'm going to take it as a latter.
I like this one, Benked Axel. Si, my valve stem is also flexible. Maybe it's just age.
Oh, nice. Andy BK said, as soon as the video started, I thought, I bet Alex cheats. Regicycle said, pointed out that Alex isn't the only cheater to ride that era of Trek Madone.
Oh,
shots fired.
Yeah.
Shots fired.
Dr. Rusty 5, Alex now owes HMRC the tax on that 750 quid, or GSN now owns his retro bike. One of the two.
And then Nostradamus put, the race was rigged. Ollie can't ride in the dry. He will swim, spin the world backwards. His rain god status is bonkers.
It is.
How much it rains. Yeah. So, I mean, it's been a pretty much like a heat wave and a drought in Europe. Mm. And he sent us a video from the top of Alpe d'Huez at like 2 a.m. with rain like I've never seen before.
It was horrific, wasn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely horrific, yeah.
It continues. Had quite a few nice comments about the equipment you guys were using away from the bikes, actually, Si. This one, Hrisko 100able. What sunglasses Alex used in the race? They were super cool.
POC Propels.
Oh, is that what that's what I've got, I think.
That's what you've got, yeah.
Yeah.
They were super cool. Not as super cool as my POC Spires.
I haven't done as much riding as I should have done of late, but I did use them in the running leg of a triathlon recently, Si.
Well, yeah, you look pretty blooming cool doing that as well. Right, yeah. That video, by the way, is coming out on the Global Triathlon Network this weekend.
Yeah.
So make sure you go check it out. Give us some support.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Powell Louse put new HJC helmets. Colour scheme looked great. Powell Louse doesn't watch the GCN show, clearly.
No. Oliver Proctor, absolutely love the new helmets, if only they're available to buy.
Yeah.
Well, maybe get involved in the comment section down below.
Yeah. Ironman or GCN specific. Yeah. Underneath the gravel challenge, this was Si and Alex trying to beat pro gravel rider
Jensen Young.
Jensen Young.
We shouldn't have listened to him when he tried to negotiate his our head start downwards, basically. And then I probably should have gone to the loo before I started. And we probably shouldn't have stopped at a cafe. Yeah. Anyway.
Right.
Many, many things we regret. Leroy Pick, though, said, when you picture around London, you think of some kind of continuous urban hellhole. But that was a little short of amazing.
Yeah, you really enjoyed it, didn't you?
Oh, so good. Yeah. And
you only did half.
Over half. I only had 120k to go. I could have done that, Dan, if it wasn't for Alex.
Silver Van Man Fly. Alex really needs to sort his eating strategy.
Oh, yeah, I put this in because I thought that was a little bit like it was missing the point. Like, we've been riding for 10 hours. Yeah. There comes a point where no matter how many carbs you eat, like, you kind of can't do any more, particularly when it's 33 degrees out. Yeah. So I thought that was a little bit of a low blow, that one. Moni Sam said, thoroughly enjoyed this video. Sorry, I should say, Alex and Si did a fantastic job of getting as far as they did, but Jensen was amazing. And then Fickle Pickle added, more Jensen, please. He comes across like a very down-to-earth guy. Yes. I mean, I think he was a very down-to-earth guy. He's stopped answering our phone calls, unfortunately.
Oh, has he?
Well, I mean, it was quite a brutal day for him. You know,
yeah, he's probably still suffering, I'd imagine.
Probably.
Trying to catch you guys up.
Yeah, not that he has actually got top 20 in the last two UCI Gravel World Series events that I happened to notice on his Strava.
Just one final one underneath. The Tour de France is brutal on the human body. Here's why. Insane comic dude, but these Dan talks at camera videos are so simple and yet very interesting.
Why did you pick that comment out?
I didn't pick it out.
No, I picked it out.
Yeah, nice.
I thought it might be nice to have a compliment.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that and your gym bro biceps, you've done quite well this week.
Oh, yeah, I've done all right, actually.
Right
then, coming up on the channel this week on Thursday, Alpe d'Huez King of the Mountains segment hunting.
Yeah, Ollie's roped in a very special guest, we should say, actually, for that one. So stay tuned for that. And then similarly, Alpe d'Huez themed, Ollie rode the Étape de Tour at the weekend. And we got the video of how he gets on coming out for you on Saturday, which incidentally is the same day that the pros tackle the very same route. So we'll be able to see exactly how Ollie shapes up compared to whoever wins that stage.
Very nice. And on Sunday, you might remember, should I say, that Naomi, our colleague, has been training up for a 100-mile event. Well, she went over to go and do it over in Finland, and you're going to see the results of her efforts on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely you will. Right then, Dan, just the nuggets to go.
Have you actually got one?
I have, mate, of course I have.
I thought we have to apologise for not having one.
No, depends when you're going to watch this video, but a little heads up, so... I mean, I can't quite believe I'm saying this, Dan, but we've managed to borrow a Lamborghini.
Ah, yes.
So, we are going to be racing a Lamborghini through central London. Now, unfortunately, I don't get to drive it. Connor Dunn is going to be driving it.
Well, we hope. Not sure he's going to fit in it yet. You might end up driving
You know how much Connor likes his gubbins on his bike. Connor manages to make even the most beautiful superbike look terrible by festooning it with crap. So I've banned him from bringing his fluffy dice to hang off the rearview mirror, if it's got one, actually. Do supercars have rearview mirrors these days?
I don't know.
I've got no idea. I'll find out for you on Wednesday. Anyway, I've got to race it on a push bike, basically. So we'll see how that one goes. But if you are knocking around in London on Wednesday and you see someone stalling a Lamborghini, make sure you have a look, because it'll be Conor Dunn driving it.
With his head out the top of it. Yeah. Right, thanks for watching. We'll see you again next week.
Do you know why Neptune is the windiest planet in the universe?
I have heard this, but I've forgotten the punchline.
Because it's next to Uranus.
Oh, yeah.